This is a presentation entitled Social Outsourcing as a Development Tool by Richard Heeks of the Development Informatics Group of the University of Manchester in the UK. It was first presented in November 2006 at the UK Development Studies Association annual conference, and it can be listened to in conjunction with an associated PowerPoint presentation. Of which I'm actually going to start not on the first slide, but on the second slide, to say that when we think about the private sector and development, there are two potentially quite different perspectives on poor communities that may exist. The first, represented, say, by the bottom of the pyramid book, represented by the UN Commission on the Private Sector and Development, tends to see the poor as consumers, able to have voice and engage with large firms through consumption of what those large firms produce. Now, my focus and my work has been the opposite way around. I've been interested in conceiving the poor as producers, seeing enterprise as something that can exist within poor communities, and seeing any engagement of the poor with large organisations as being that of producers who might produce what large organisations consume. Now, the case that I'm going to describe, which was researched with the support of funding from the UK's Department for International Development, this is one in which members of a poor community come together to create their own businesses and to create goods and services that are consumed by large organisations. So, what actually goes on in the case that we look at as a summary on the third slide? It's based in Kerala State in southern India. A small group of unemployed women from below poverty line households come together, or they're brought together, to form a cooperative micro-enterprise. They have to invest $30 US each. Government will give them a grant of 10 times that amount, and that total will then be matched by a bank loan. So their typical starting capital has been around $6,000. They're also assisted through government with training and with other enterprise support. Now, many thousands of these enterprises work in Kerala in a wide variety of different areas, but our particular interest was the opportunity for work in information technology services. In all, 234 IT services micro-enterprises have been created, and these work in three main areas. Around two-thirds of them work in IT training as an adjunct to local secondary schools, training school pupils in term time, and then they train local clients during the holidays. About one-third work on data entry and related activities. They undertake almost all of the digitisation work required by local and state governments, such as, say, for example, digitisation of voter records. And three of these micro-enterprises work on computer assembly and maintenance. They build, they support PCs for public sector departments, banks, nearby firms, and so on. I'll move on in just a moment to talk about the outcome of this new business model, but I want to just identify three particular aspects of it, which are summarised on the fourth slide. First of all, we're looking here at IT services. We could have looked at food processing, we could have looked at cleaning, but we chose IT. Why? First of all, because a real connection between ICTs and the poor has been something of a holy grail for parts of the development community, and this appears to be an example. Second, because it's not the only example. ICTs are increasingly being installed into poor communities and are thus providing a foundation for ICT-based entrepreneurship. Third, IT training and PC maintenance, of course, require a physical presence and hence physical proximity to the client. But some data entry work and other types of back office work do not require a physical presence, and they therefore open up a significant array of possibilities for outsourcing at a distance. For instance, working from urban to rural sites, that's an activity that's been undertaken by the TENET project in Tamil Nadu. Also opportunities for offshoring work from industrialised countries to social enterprises in developing countries, and that's an activity being undertaken by Digital Divide Data in Cambodia. And fourthly, we chose IT because many of the traditional areas in which micro-enterprise projects are created in developing countries seem to represent static or declining markets, but the IT market is and seems set to remain an area of strong growth in demand. Overall, double-digit per year, with niche areas of even faster expansion. The second particular feature of this case is that the main outsourcer is the public sector, perhaps only around 10% of work overall coming from the private sector. However, as per the Tamil Nadu, the Cambodia cases I just mentioned, this is equally something that private sector firms, both big and small, are doing. And the third particular feature, which is also present in both of those other two cases I mentioned, is that this is not pure and simple commercial outsourcing. Instead, and hence the title of this presentation, this is what I would call social outsourcing. It is outsourcing with a partly commercial intent by the client. Yes, they want to get the job done well, done at good value, but also with a partly developmental intent. In the case of Digital Divide Data, for example, large US firms seem to see this as part of their corporate social responsibility agenda, perhaps also as an antidote to some of the heavy criticism of offshoring, since this is offshoring with a conscience. This is fair trade in IT. In the case of the Kerala government, there's an even more significant emphasis on the developmental aspect of the outsourcing. They want to get the IT training and the digitization work done, and done well, and done quickly, and done cheaply, but they just as much want to create new enterprises and new livelihoods and bring developmental benefits into poor communities. So, social outsourcing is a combination of two elements: an outsourcing element with contracts and deliverables and managerial issues, and a social element with livelihoods and empowerment and sustainability issues. I'm not going to talk much about the outsourcing side of things. That seems to be going well. The digitization projects have been done well, demand from public sector clients is growing, quality issues have been targeted and managed. Perhaps controversially, though perhaps not surprisingly, contract costs are often lower than they would be if the outsourcing was done on a standard commercial basis. What I will instead talk about now, and that's summarised on the fifth slide of the presentation, is the developmental impact of this particular example of social outsourcing of IT services. We, particularly through our local partners Planet Kerala, undertook a series of group interviews, individual interviews, unstructured life story sessions and observational visits during 2005 and 2006. We gathered data on a range of different issues, but one section of our data was focused on the developmental impact, and this we structured around a revised version of the Livelihoods Assets Pentagon. I say revised because we replaced natural capital, which didn't play a direct role here, with political capital to encompass the reported impacts in relation to empowerment. So, what was the impact seen around these five capital assets? In terms of financial capital, almost every enterprise is achieving the goal of providing its members with an income of at least $1 per day. For just over half of the respondents, that income represents 50% or more of their total household income. And as well as covering everyday expenditure, its use was more often reported to us in relation to exceptional items that could now be afforded: healthcare, education, land purchase, marriage. 75% of the enterprises had already paid off their initial loans, and a number had taken out further loans. The main problem has been the poor payment record of the main client, government, with enterprises sometimes waiting 3 or 6 or even 12 months to receive payments for work undertaken. In relation to human capital, Kerala, as many of you may know, has a high level of human capital, and most of the women involved, although unable to get jobs, had at least 10 years of education. Nonetheless, one can quite easily identify ways in which human capital has been strengthened. There's been a fairly obvious gain of IT-related skills for thousands of women, and core enterprise members have picked up managerial and entrepreneurial skills as well. Turning to physical capital, cooperative ownership of the enterprise's ICT infrastructure, which was typically about one PC per member, has supplied each woman with a work-related asset worth the equivalent of almost 2 years' income. And that's provided useful collateral for additional loans, albeit collateral due to the upgrade mania of the PC world that declines quite steeply in value over time. Thinking of social capital, narrow, heavily localised social networks have been expanded. In formal terms, women have new linkages to a variety of government officials, and informally, the cooperation, mutual trust and the team spirit among enterprise group members has given them a strong sense of new social capital. And finally, looking at political capital and empowerment. The women described their empowerment in terms of changing self-identity and changing status. They talked constantly about their new confidence in tackling problems, in approaching institutions, in dealing with other people. And they talked too about respect, recognition, and acceptance in their communities, not simply because of having a job, but because of having an ICT-related job, something associated with modernity and progress and hope. Changes in gender relations, I have to say, were less clear. These women were taking on traditionally male, e.g. management roles. Some were hiring and managing men as employees. Some were breaking away from traditional female goals of security and stasis to push for growth in their enterprises. However, men still fill almost all roles as government customers and also in the state poverty eradication mission that oversees this activity, although the current head of the eradication mission is a woman. There remains a degree of deference to fathers or husbands as ultimate decision makers in the household, and expectations of women's triple role, wife, mother, worker, community member, still lurk not far beneath the surface. One other question mark lies around the issue of dependency and sustainability. Can this last? Can it become less dependent on government as the main client? This is a concern, but I notice several positives. Several enterprises have been running for more than 6 years, and the great majority for more than four. That's longer than the average lifespan of a small enterprise. Core members do occasionally drop out for reasons of marriage or alternative employment, but in most cases they're replaced by new employees. Diversification away from government is limited, but it is definitely on the agenda, and some units now earn a third or more of their income from private customers. And even if the worst happened and social outsourcing from government dried up, all the assets that I just described, the financial, the human, the physical, the social, the political, would remain with the women. In conclusion then, and turning to the sixth and final slide, this is not a panacea, and this example does relate not to the poorest of the poor. Nonetheless, we can see a huge opportunity area here for all organisations, from major multinationals down to small firms in developing countries, from the private sector through to government and the NGO sector. Social outsourcing is an opportunity area generally, but we can see an opportunity area specifically in relation to social outsourcing of IT services. If we take large firms, this is an area where they can use their power to interact with the bottom of the pyramid, not as producers, but as consumers. And if it's done right, this can bring about a potential triple win. For the micro, the social enterprise subcontractors, there are development benefits. They get the means to create new livelihoods and the means to develop entrepreneurship. For the large firm clients, there are economic benefits. They get delivery of IT services, often at low cost. And the third part of the triple win, again for those same large firm clients, is that there are political benefits. They get delivery on their corporate social responsibility agenda. Thank you.